No, you won't be able to carry anything if there's no air. Ask again. Ask the people that whatever house, wherever you're staying, the guest house. So what did Rav Hachbaum say? So you want to call someone that will... Rav Hachbaum. I don't think I have it here. I have it at home. What?
We make it here.
No, here. Unless you can get a bunch of tractors and telephone poles. A parenthetical note that I think is obvious. If there is some kind of carrying going on, and for whatever reason it's not safe to leave your belongings behind, so you end up with the cell phone in your backpack, don't leave the cell phone on. That's like a big boost if someone dials a wrong number and your phone goes off, and it's off. So, make sure to turn it off. One other public service announcement, another very important one. We've had, I know it was addressed regarding meals, but then we had it with Dr. Callis's shiur as well. If you sign up for something, you really should be at what you commit to. Dr. Callis, for example, is a very high-paid surgeon, and his time is very, very precious. And he happens to be a very, very bright guy. And so on the side, he became a major Talmid Chacham. And he gives his time for free to the yeshiva and to the guys, for free. And he expects that if guys sign up for his shiur, they'll be there. He's not all that excited to put in like 20 hours to prepare a shiur when there were 20 guys that signed up and two guys show. It's not right. And the same thing is true with Rabbi Berman. If he's up late because 20 guys sign in, and then there's only two at a meal, like, just get into the habit. If you sign up for something, be there. Just a general service announcement about life. Okay. Without further ado. Can I leave one too? Vayuchaye Sarah. In the life of Sarah, Meyashana, Vesrim Shana, Yesheva Shanim, 100 years. 20 years and 7 years. The question many people ask is why the word years keeps reappearing, just say 127 years. There's a concept of 100, there's a concept of 20, a concept of 7. And if she lived 127 years, it means that she lived the concept of 100, the concept of 20, the concept of 7. And whatever those concepts mean, you could see Rashi, you could see some of the other Mepharshim, but it's a very interesting idea. Someone asked me, why is it that the largest Perek of Tehillim has 176 Psukim? Perek? Kuf Yud Tet. Why is it that the largest Masechta in Shas, which is Baba Basra, has 176 blot? And the largest parsha in Torah, Parshas Naso, has 176 psukim. Apparently, there's something up with the concept of 176. And indeed, I don't know the answer, but I know that it does mean that it's not by coincidence. There's a concept of 100, a concept of 70. Perhaps the concept of 100 is 10 times 10. 10 is Kedusha. The minimum for Kedusha, a whole number, you have 10 sets of 10. Kodesh Kadashim, some kind of extra concept of Kedusha. Shivim, 70, is the concept of Zikna, of Chachma, Zeshakana Chachma, Zakeh. 6, the Vav, is a Vav HaChibur, a Vav of connection, and Vih, and you put these ideas together, that's the concept of 176. Again, I'm just giving you hints. Same thing is true by Sarah Imenu, 127 is a concept of 100, a concept of 20, and a concept of 7. Each thing has a concept associated with it, and what we're suggesting is that Sara Yimeinu maximized each idea. When it says in the Torah that Yitzchak was 60 now and 40 now and this one was this, who cares? Perhaps the idea is that when they live to a certain age, there are very, very few people that actually live to the age, to the maturity that is expected at a certain age. And when the Torah says this one was 60, it means he was 60 the way the Ribbono Shel Olam anticipates and hopes a 60-year-old would be. We know that in America, I think, the goal of college is to be as immature as long as possible. Right? The joke in college is that universities are full of knowledge. Freshmen bring a little in and seniors leave with none. So the point is not to be as immature for as long as possible. The goal is to be as mature as soon as possible. And I think that's the idea of a number, and all the numbers in Torah, this person, the 100, she got the 100 fully down pat, the 20, she got it down pat, she maximized her life. And that's a great introduction to the next half of the Pasuk, which is three words that are very, very difficult to understand. Once again, we'll do a little chazar in the first half, so I don't lose you. The years of Sarah's life were 127 years. Kama, shnei, chaye Sarah, years of life of Sarah. That is an awful sentence. Terrible sentence structure. Years of life of Sarah. What is that? Is that a phrase? Is there a semicolon there? Is that what's the shot? Anyone have an art scroll? Let's see how Art Scroll translates it. First pasuk. I need a bunch. First pasuk. Yeah, the parsha. So go ahead.
Sarah's lifetime was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. Semicolon. The years of Sarah's life.
What was the years of Sarah's life?
I'm guessing.
So thanks to Art Scroll. That was kind of useless. Oh, the years of Sarah's life? Thank you, Ellie. Shka. He's always been our good guinea pig over the year. Years of Sarah's life? What is that? What's it saying? To make a difficult question a lot harder, Rashi comes along and says, he notes that there's a problem here. Shnei chaye Sarah, kulan shavin latova. They were all good years. Number one, how did Rashi get that? Where did that come from? It says, years of life of Sarah? Well, they happen to have been all good years. And the second problem is, how does that help you read the phrase? The problem in the pasuk is it doesn't read. The second, now we have an additional problem. Thank you very much for making something up. And therefore, I was bothered. I had no idea what pshat is. Benny Berlin, I guess, will tell us the rest of Shir. Did you listen to it this week? Oh. He's like God. He knows before it happens. So, I was looking around and I saw a beautiful commentary by the Baal HaTurim. The Baal HaTurim has a slightly different take, but from something the Baal HaTurim says, I was able to really understand Pshat and Rashi. It's something very, very important about life. Just to understand who the Baal HaTurim is, he's the son of the Rush. He wrote the Tur Shulchan Aruch before he got married. He wrote the Tur, and then before he got married, he met a girl. And he went to the future father-in-law and he said, it's very nice that you clearly know a lot of Torah, but you know a lot of Gemara and Halacha. It's not clear to me, at least, that you know anything about Chumash. So he, that night, spent the night and wrote the parish of the Baal HaTurim on Chumash,
and presented it to his father, future-in-law, it'll do. And he let her marry her. It happens to be one of the deepest pshatim in Chumash. And this is what the Baal HaTorim writes. Shnei Chayei Sara, Shnei comes from the word, not Shanim, years, but Shnei from the word Shnayim, too. There were two times that Sara Yimeinu had life. She lived 127 years. But there are two times within those 127 years that she lived life. When is that? One, when she was able to have children naturally. In her younger years. And she thought her whole life she was optimistic. I can have kids. And life moved on. And her body aged. And it was no longer a feasibility. She lost a lot of her exuberance of life. And then when the miracle happened, at 90 years old, and somehow her womb changed to be able to carry a child, she once again had life. There were two times in her life when she had life. From this Baal HaTorim, I understood that there's another word that he's retranslating from what we were thinking originally. And that is, the word Chayei can come from two possible things. It can come from the word Chayim, life, physical, breathing, heart beating life, or it can come from another word entirely called Chiyut, which is the exuberance of life. What makes you tick? That's what the Baal HaTorim is talking about. Shnei Chayei Sara. Out of the 127 years of physical life, Bayu Chayei from the word Chayim, but only two times within that Chayim, the physical life, did she have Chiyut, did she have exuberance of life. Rabosai, just to explain to you a little bit what the exuberance of life means. You know, in America, we have a famous advertisement from Folgers. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is not your family. It's not work. It's not being productive. It's not even making money. It's a cup of coffee. That's the best part of waking up. The Mashkichim in the European yeshivas used to say, Kum, Lavoda Sabore. Get up to the service of the Creator. That's the best part of waking up. Today, we get up to a cup of coffee. Now, maybe it's taking a silly advertisement a little too far. So we'll see who's taking what too far. Because, you know, there was a society formed in about the 80s called the Rump Society. The Rump Society is not a well-known society today, but it was very active in the 80s. You see, Crayola, the crayon company, they decided to get rid of three colors. Raw, umber, and maize. From the box of 164 crayons, it's now going to be 161. And thus, the Rump Society formed. Raw Umber Maize Preservation Society. I kid you not, had Crayola received only like a few letters, it would have been understandable. But a whole society formed. And they had to hire a whole group of people, a whole committee,
just to field the thousands of letters that Crayola received about this Hupper decision that they made to get rid of these three colors. This is the most pressing thing in America. It must be stopped. How dare they? We're going to take this to the Supreme Court. And it's not going to stop. Put the kids aside. Forget the wife. I'm a member of the Rum Society. It's frivolous. They're living simply a frivolous life. There was a Yom Kippur appeal of a certain shul. The Yom Kippur appeal. Kol Nidre appeal. That's the greatest, right? Please annul the vows. So the vow was to save the redwood forest. Baruch Hashem, they raised $1 million. For the Yom Kippur Kol Nidre appeal. Impressive. Gosh, I wish I was that appeal. That is impressive. For a bozai. Where's their life? Imagine the following scenario. You go to the Toys R Us nearest you when you're like 5 years old, and you go with your mom, your dad, and you see that train set, you know, the one that goes up the wall, the one that like loop flies off the track and lands miraculously back on, and you want it so bad, you're salivating. Please, please. Your mom doesn't buy it for you. But good news, when you're getting married and you're 25, your mother comes over to you and says, "Son, here's the train set you've always wanted. Mazel tov on your wedding." That's your wedding gift from your parents. I certainly hope that what interested you as a 5-year-old is not what's going to interest you as a 25-year-old. Hopefully we mature. There's a story with Reb Elimelech Milozhinsk. Reb Elimelech, I don't know if you know Reb Elimelech. There was two famous brothers, Reb Zosha and Reb Elimelech. If you ever were like at an NCSY Shabbaton, they told the famous story. Reb Zosha, why weren't you like Reb Zosha? Okay, know it, good, don't know it. We'll say it, I'm sure, another time. So Reb Elimelech was his brother. They both wrote Sfarim. They're not fictitious figures. We have Sfarim from both of them, great tzaddikim. And Reb Elimelech Milozhinsk was once hitching a ride, and he got picked up, of course, by a horse and buggy, because that's how all stories happen then. And he gets in, and believe it or not, what happens is it was a rainy night, and the wagon got stuck in the mud. The guy gets out to see what's going on, and his horse also got stuck. He's trying to help the horse. The horse, I guess, had a heart attack and dropped dead on the spot. You gonna believe it? The man was so distraught, he started crying, wailing. He couldn't deal with it, and he too had a heart attack on the spot. And Reb Elimelech said, "I guess I'll walk home from here." And he was thinking on the way home, that was a strange event. I mean, like, Nebuch, the guy, he clearly lived for his horse. That was his whole world. His horse. So I just wonder, like, what kind of olam... The guy did a mitzvah. He did pick me up. But, like, what's his olam haba going to look like? And that night, he had a dream, and he saw the man in olam haba with two beautiful white horses. And Reb Elimelech said, "Good. But never. When you go up to Shemayim, you have the opportunity to enjoy the presence of the Ribon Shel Olam, to dance with Hashem,
to have the most meaning in all of life that possibly one can imagine. And what's he? He's going to dance with the two ferrets, you know, the two horses. That is a problem if, as you mature, what makes you tick is still nothingness. That's the chiyus of Sarah Imenu. Shnei chayei Sarah. All her years, Shnei, Rashi doesn't go with the Baal HaTurim on the word Shnei from Shnayim 2. He goes with the word Shnei from Shanim, years of chiyus of Sarah. She lived 127 years, comma, years of exuberance for Sarah. Years of good. Years that her heart was pounding, ticking, loving life. I'll give you a story. It was a guy, Rabbi Freyan went ahead and he gave a lecture in Brooklyn. And after the shiur, he was going to take... someone was going to give him a ride to the train. From the train, he was going to take the train back up to Baltimore. This was about 20 years ago. Rabbi Freyan gets into the car, and the man says to him, and he thinks like he just gave a great cheer. He's all happy with himself. And the man says, Brand is the name? Like, you know, don't deflate my ego right away. Fran. So you go, okay, Fran. So they get into the car. So, Rabbi, do they have shuls in Baltimore? Like, I mean, I live there. Yeah, we have shuls in Baltimore. Rabbi, do they have, like, a minion factory in Baltimore? I don't know what the story is now, but 20 years ago they did not, apparently, as the they do now. Okay, Mazel Tov. Welcome to getting on the map. So Rabbi Fran said, no, we have the community minion, we have the yeshiva minion. Like, so you can't just go into some shul that no matter what you'll always make zman. No, there are certain set minyan. And the conversation went on. Rabbi Fran realized that he was talking to an absolutely unbelievable tzaddik, someone did not know a lot of learning, but this guy was clear was going to be going straight to Olam. This man lived for minyan. That's what he decided to make his mitzvah. For the past 13 years, he never missed Zman Kriya Shema, the Magen Avram. That's the earlier minyan. For the past 13 years, he's been saying all of Sefer Tehillim before davening Shacharis. So he'd wake up 2 hours before. For the past 13 years, he decided to stop traveling to Florida for vacation because he might end up missing a mincha or a mariv outside of a minyan. The man lived for minyan. That's what his passion was. There's some people whose passion is raw umber and maize, and some people whose passion is tefillah, Eretz Yisrael, Torah, Halacha, helping society, chesed, building the shuls of the community. You pick your thing, but it's got to be something good. What are you here for? And that's the chiyus of life. The one big kasha that we have, though, on this Rashi, how is this possible? We are talking about Sarah Imenu. Sarah Imenu had a very difficult life. Kulan, Shavim, Latova, they were all good years. How could it be that they were all good years? They were terrible. She was taken, Abimelech, by Paro. She was taken twice. She didn't have kids for 90 years. She was made fun of by Hagar. She had a miserable life. How could it be? That doesn't make sense. Cool on Shavuot Tov, they were all great. And with this, I have to explain something very important about life. There are two ways of looking at everything. And we all know this to be true. There are those of us that look at the same event in a positive approach, and those of us that look at the same thing in a negative approach. There's a guy in Brooklyn, he sells Sfarim, and he is always happy, forever happy, and forever will be happy. And if you go and ask him, he'll tell you why. Because he was in London, and he was visiting, and there were two car services at the time to take you to the airport. One was always early, and one was notoriously late. And he figured, I like to be on time. He called the one that's always early, and somehow the numbers got mixed up, and he ended up calling the one that's notoriously late, and lo and behold, they were late. They were so late that he missed his flight. Pan Am, Shuttle 5050, the Pan Am shuttle that blew up over Lockerbie. And he said, you know, I'm happy. I'm alive. I should be dead. I'm alive. Sari Imeno, Kulan Shavin Latova every day. I'm alive. I'm alive. I'm here. There's so many scenarios like this. In BMT, we once took the guys on a teal. 3-day teal. One of my student Havrusas comes back all upset. Why is he all upset? How was the teal? It's terrible. A lot teal. Never failed teal. It's terrible. How was Har Shlomo? Oh, that was the greatest mountain ever. Had a great time climbing that. How were the water sports? That was great. Hotel? Fantastic. Where's the problem? On the way back, so one of the guys started making fun of him, bothering him, annoying him. So the whole deal was bad. We have so many instances like this. You go to a wedding. How was the wedding? It was great, but the music was too loud. How was this? The food was a little too salty. How was the rabbi's speech? It was good, but you know, a little long, a little this, a little that. Everything we have in life, there's a but. Life indeed would be more beautiful if you just leave the but out. And we have it all over. And we stick it in. And I'm not telling you not to notice it. Because if you don't notice it, then you're just blind and you don't know how to perfect it for yourself, for your own. You have to know how to better the product. But it also can't make you turn your whole attitude and perspective of what was just experienced bad. That's all bad. I can't listen to that rabbi. Why? He's boring. Maybe he's saying over gems. Maybe he's saying jewels. Diamonds are coming out of his mouth. Listen to him. I'll tell you a wild story. I'm the son of a rabbi. My father was a school principal for 30-some years. And therefore, he used to like talking about one of his favorite subjects, curriculum. Oh, and that is a real favorite for high school students. Right? So when I would be driven by my father to the Bergen County bus stop in the mornings, like every morning, so of course, every morning we spoke about curriculum. Wow, was that exciting. And every morning, I remember, it was the worst. I'd get in the car, and we'd talk about some teacher, or some this, and some program, and I was in the least bit interested. And then it hit me one day. You know, I am really a captured audience here. I'm stuck anyway. Why bother rolling my eyes? It's not even like I could roll my eyes with someone else. I'm there by myself. Maybe it would be more worthwhile if I would just fake it as if I'm actually interested in what the man is saying. And you know what happened? From the day I faked it, was not long till I actually was interested. I don't know. I don't remember if it was a few days, a few weeks. I just remember it was a very short time. Rabbo said there are a lot of things that people don't enjoy. So fake it. Try it. Try it sincerely. And you never know. The enjoyment might just come like the next day. And there's a lot that gets in our way. There's this but, there's that but. I'll tell you some absolutely amazing stories. We'll go back to tell the story about Rabbi Elimelech Milozhinsk. They were two brothers. Rav Zusha had it great. Traditionally, throughout their lives, Rav Zusha had it great, and Rabbi Elimelech always had it bad. Always. His whole life was bad. He was oppressed, he was beaten, he was poor, Rav Zusha was rich. Rav Zusha was a prince, Rav Elimelech was totally impoverished. They were once actually thrown into jail together. And the story goes that the Kazakhs were drinking and they decide they're going to have a good time with the inmates. So they go down, they open up the cell, and they beat up the guy in the first bed, Rabbi Elimelech. And they totally beat him up. And then they forgot about Rabbi Zusha. They went off. Rabbi Zusha looks at his brother and says, "Brother, you look so awful. I feel so terrible for you. Please, let's switch beds. So that way if they come back again, next time they'll beat me up and they'll leave you alone." So they switch beds. Taka, they drink a little more. And they want to have some more fun. They go down to the cell. They're about to beat up Rav Zusha. And one of them pipes in and says, "Well, we beat him up last time. Let's beat him up this time." And they go and they kill, destroy. They didn't kill him. They beat up Rav Elimelech twice. And Rav Zusha not. Typical. Typical of Rav Elimelech's life. And I have in my sitter the Tzetel Katan, the living will that Rav Elimelech wrote to his children. Like 40 little points, and the number 4 or 5, Rabbi Elimelech writes, "What does it mean? Tzadik v'ralo, Rasha v'tovlo? Who has it good and who has it bad? Why does the tzadik have it bad?" And you know what Rabbi Elimelech's response was? The man that had it terrible his whole life. "I don't know. Why are you asking me? I never had a bed." That must be a question only for the spectator, the one who's looking in. The tzaddik himself, I don't know. "You shouldn't ask me, I never suffered." That's what Rabbi Elimelech's response was. This is something that goes to the root of our future. Our future is literally based on this point. We are going to have children, Mitzvah. We're going to have spouses, Mitzvah. And you look at your spouse, and you're going to see positives and negatives. You're going to have children, and you're going to see positives and negatives. What is your thought? How did I get the rotten children? Or is your thought, how am I so lucky to have such a wonderful child? Is your thought, how did I get a terrible spouse? Or is your thought, how did I get such a wonderful spouse? And it's all up to you. It's up to your perspective. And you get to choose. And half full, half empty, you got to straighten that out. I'll tell you two more stories that are absolutely amazing. Rav Kreiser was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Mir in Shanghai. And when, I don't know if all of you know the story, Mir was Yeshivas Mir, was not Yeshivas Mir. It was Shunat Mir, it was a community in Europe. And And Japan sent a... China. Sounds good. China sent a few visas to Germany, to the Jews in Mir, that they could come and escape the Holocaust. Hitler was totally upset by this, so he sent China his best propaganda. How could you do this? Jewish people, that they're good at economy, and they're going to take over the whole world. That's all China needed to hear. They're good at economy. Thank you very much. They sent 2,000 more visas. And the entire town of Mir picked up and went off to Shanghai. The entire place was saved. They set up a yeshiva there. It's actually a phenomenal story. There was a man that actually had this vision of just like one day woke up in Shanghai. I have a vision of making this big giant yeshiva. And he went ahead and built a giant campus. He was a wealthy man. And he built a giant campus, a dorm, a facility, a kitchen, already, and lo and behold, about a month or two later, there were 2,000 Jews that came, and they had a place where to move into, and a place to learn, and they set up a yeshiva, and a place for the families and the children, all ready for them. It was outrageous. Rav Kreiser came to America after the war, and he taught a number of Rabbanim, and one of his Talmidim was Rabbi Yudin, my hometown Rav. And Rabbi Yudin went to visit him on his deathbed a few days before he died. He died of liver cancer. And he went and he said, "Rebbe, you look happy." And Rav Kreiser said to Rabbi Yudin, "Let me tell you, Ribbono Shalom created two different diseases in the world. He created a disease called depression, and he created a disease called liver cancer. God gave me one. I'm going to die with one." He understood how to continue to look at the positive. And one last story. Story about a place called Ir Emuna. There was a town in Gush Katif called Atzmona. The government of Israel told them to live in Atzmona. They said, "We want you to live there. Please live there. It will help strategically." And these Jews went off to help the government. They asked us to live there. It's important for the country. We're going to go live there. Just to find themselves some years later, about 20 years later, having their homes bulldozed, money not given to them, zero. They were thrown into the streets, literally, due to their own fundraising efforts and their own money. They were able to set up a tent and live in tents. Literally tents. There was this big, giant warehouse that never went up, and the only thing that had gone up was the roof. The walls, there were no walls. And they set up public showers, like stalls outside, toilets outside, tents that are basically exposed. They're not even as secure as the tents that Leva Torah has. And that's what the people of Atzmona ended up living in for 2 years. And they renamed their place called Ir HaEmunah, City of Belief. And we went to visit them, and we brought clothes. We did a clothing collection. My family and a few other families that we knew, and my in-laws and our family, we went off to visit them. And when we got there, my father-in-law, it was an ardent Zionist for many, many years, started saying to the guy that was giving us the tour, showing us around of how they were living, "I'm really sorry." As if he felt guilty for what had been done to them. even if you think that strategically, politically, it was a good move, a bad move, why did they have to do it so quickly without having the money in place? Why did they have to be so cruel about it and not give money? They bulldozed their homes and their work. They had nothing. There are people that are paying mortgages on their homes and businesses that are destroyed.
And my father-in-law was saying to them, I'm so sorry. On behalf of the government, on behalf of Israel, on behalf of the Jewish people, I'm so sorry that this happened.
And the man stopped my father-in-law, a man that deserves to be filled with hatred and anger. And he said the following line, Ba'olam yesh harbeh choshech. There's a lot of darkness. V'yesh ma'at or and a little bit of light. V'anachno po v'yir ha'mona mityachasim ach berak l'ma'at ha'or sheba'olam.
We only relate to the little light that there is in the world.
We don't talk about the dark. We don't relate to the dark. Here,
we're going to be optimistic. And Ribbono Shel Olam, they know what difficulty is.
There were many of them that needed therapy from the traumas of what went on. There are many that still are undergoing financial difficulties, most of them.
The government has still, 3 years later, still has not given them anything.
And year after year you go visit, they're still optimistic. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves us.
We're left with nothing, penniless.
The Ribbono Shel Olam loves us. They had homes. Beautiful. They built mansions for like $50,000. Some of them had pools. They lived on the shore. Gone. Finished. They're penniless. They're paupers. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves us.
Every single person makes that decision in his life. And now's the time to hear it, because you go through life and it can transfer. It doesn't go away unless you work on it. It starts with yeshiva's bad, this rabbi's bad, this person, my roommate, everybody in the world is bad. I'm bad. You're not allowed to do that to yourself. You have a chiyuv d'oraisa to love yourself. The ahavta l'reacha kamocha, the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, if you have to love a chiyuv d'oraisa, you have to love your neighbor like yourself, it means you have a chiyuv d'oraisa to love yourself, or else how could you love the other guy? An amazing teaching. You have a chiyuv d'oraisa to love yourself.
Kul an shavin latova, all the years of Sarai Imeno were good. She had a very difficult life. She had a good life. She lived for every year. Emirat Hashem, we should understand this message, that number one, we have to come up with an understanding of what our chiyus in life is all about, what makes us tick, what makes us vibrant in life, why do we wake up in the morning, and number two, to start looking on the positive about everything, about ourselves, about other people, about our roommates, friends, about the world. The greatest, most beautiful flower, the rose, has thorns. And that's to give us that very message. What are you going to look at? And if it's a shame, if we all do this, we all look at the positive, not ignore the negative, but that we're mityachas in our personalities. And if it's a shame, all of our years will also be kulam shavin latam. Thank you.